I think the big thing is just take the step. Like, there's so many times that I've had ideas for things and not done it. And I think going through the training and hearing from the community gave me the confidence that I needed. Although once you do it, you really are on your own. It is your deal. Like, you've got a lot of support, you've got a lot of structure, but you're not going to learn any other way.
Hi, I'm Wyatt.
And I'm Grace.
And you're listening to Our Dad and your host of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with our expert corner interviews with short-term rental investors willing to let us listen in on their journey into short-term rental investing and share the good, the bad, the ugly of that journey. And today we've got Raj and Annika Vilji and from up Pacific Northwest, just north of Seattle. And so welcome to the show, you guys. I appreciate you joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So I always just like to get a background of people. You know, it's always fun for me to understand, you know, we, in the short-term rental world, this is a world of what I call mom and pop investors, right? A lot of people who are, you know, getting into real estate investing, they're not big institutional investors. And so it's always fun for me to hear the backstory. What pays the bills? What got you interested in real estate in the first place? But what is your background and what does the day job consist of? And tell me how that correlated into interest in short-term rentals and real estate investing.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I've been working in tech for the last 14 or 15 years. So I'm a product manager. I work at Google now. Worked at Amazon, Facebook, and Google. So kind of big name companies.
The big ones, yeah.
Yeah. And I think we've always enjoyed, as a couple and then as a family, once we started having kids, we've always enjoyed travel. And I've always been really interested in real estate. One of those people that, like, when I see an open house, I want to stop and walk and just kind of curious. I want to see you inside. So those sort of desires have always been there. I think what got us interested in getting into short-term rentals was just this opportunity to kind of do something on my own. I've always worked for companies and had employers and spent a lot of time listening to some old episodes of the podcast and started to pique my interest. Like, hey, this could be really fun designing this experience. I geek out on like planning travel for family members in our own family. And thought it'd be really fun to design something that was wonderful for other people to do too. And, you know, make it part of my sort of like second act in my career as I transition from tech at some point. I want to have a portfolio of things that keep me busy. And this seemed like a great place to get started on that.
Awesome. Annika, what would you add to that? What keeps you busy? And what, tell me a little bit more about the family. You mentioned, Raj mentioned kids.
Yeah, we have a 14-year-old daughter and a 6-year-old son. And so they're a little far apart. So, you know, finding times to connect is trickier. So travel, stuffing them into a house together so we all have to spend time together is a kind of strategy for that. And, you know, we've also heard people say things as simple as like when you have a teenager, the only time they talk is in a hot tub.
Yeah.
And so yeah. Just having those family times is pretty strategic. But, this guy here is really the spearhead of this. He always likes his projects. It's his side projects. Keep him interested. You always like having something to work towards, look forward to. So it's been fun to be on board, but really this is his gig.
What about when you started saying, okay, I wouldn't mind having kind of that second act and some build a portfolio of something. Did you immediately know it was going to be short-term rentals? Did you dabble in anything else? Do you own any other real estate investments? What led you to this asset class?
We actually became accidental landlords in 2022. So we bought a second home in, was it 2020, I think?
21.
Height of the market, like just crazy. There were 37 offers on the property. We won out.
We didn't. We bought it sight unseen.
Okay, yeah. We actually, so we never even saw this property. It's over near Wenatchee in Washington State. And we just kind of fell in love with this house. And we're like, hey, it's had a pool in the neighborhood and we can do this. And then a year later, so if you work in tech, a large part of your compensation is stock. And a year later, the stock market did not do very well in tech. So the conversation was, well, I guess this is now a rental property. So we turned it into a midterm rental. I tried to do a short-term rental back then, so maybe this is the seed. It's in Chelan County in Washington, which has really strict standards. And long story short, the lot is like 50 square feet too small to use as a short-term rental, even though it's a 1,000 square foot lot. So we ended up renting to traveling nurses, and we've had that going for a few years now. So when the short-term rental opportunity came up, we had a little bit of experience. And I tried to do that on my own, and I sort of ran into like, oh, I didn't know there were regulations for this stuff. Like it was sort of like just the beginning of it. And so that was maybe the seed of it. I think the other seed though is I've kind of always known I didn't want to stay working in tech until retirement. Now that's especially true with AI coming. It seems like it's NFL, not for long for most of us in tech. So just starting to come up with like, what are ways to do other things that can start to bring in some income. That's probably, haven't tried a lot of other stuff. I've had a lot of ideas over the years. And that's actually part, we may talk about this a little bit later. I had trouble moving from idea to action a lot. And this was kind of the first time that really broke through.
Right. So the one that was like you guys just bought that as a second home, the one up by in Chelan County. Is that by Lake Chelan? Is that the same area?
It's at the very edge of Chelan County. It's about an hour away. It's a little town from Malaga. So it's on like a reservoir. It's a little bit of like a retired kind of resort community.
Right.
It's coming from Seattle where things can be a little frenetic and one way, maybe politically. It's nice to go to a place that has like normal people that like do their own yard work. we really enjoy going out there, exposing our kids and spending time and just being kind of normal. That was the big draw. I know that sounds really weird, but if you live in Seattle, you understand what I'm saying.
you guys know I give the whole West Coast a bad, I poke at them quite a bit on my podcast when it comes to regulations and things going on there. So you're speaking my language. I understand that. Beautiful areas. I love those areas. It's just like, yeah, sometimes you're like, where's the normal at times. So that was a true second home. And then like out of necessity, which is interesting. So that's how I got into short-term rentals. We had back in 2006, Teresa and I were doing really well, and we were developing properties and we were buying vacation homes. And ultimately when we had a development that wasn't going really well, we like out of necessity had to start renting our homes on the weekends on local classifieds. And that's what led me into short-term rentals back in 2006. And so it's an interesting path where at least you're now into the investment side of real estate saying, okay, well, somebody else is kind of paying the bills here. Kind of plants a seed. Maybe there's something to this. It is, you know, completely different than your world in tech, which is, you know, these are tangible assets. I mean, most people are fairly familiar with real estate. It's not rocket science, right? We're very familiar with it just because of our everyday lives. But then you start realizing and you start looking into it and you realize there's a lot of layers of this onion. And it sounds like that kind of kept you on the sideline for a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. And also just like the general busyness, like the tech industry, it's doing a side hustle is kind of daunting.
Right.
So I think what maybe moved me was hearing from real people like on this podcast and how they had done it. People that were teachers, people that I think you've had some folks that are in tech and other industries. Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, if they can do this, then maybe I can do it too. And that sort of got me to take the next step.
Love it. And so as you guys were thinking about the next step, walk me through some of those conversations. Was it, hey, the goal is to, you know, let's just find something close we can use. We can, like, if it doesn't work out, we at least have a home that's like kind of there. Like we're having the plan B of, well, we're okay. Or is it like, hey, we're building this portfolio and we're going to do one a year for the next 5 years. Like, tell me what that first conversation was like. I know it might change now, but I'm curious always what those first conversations sounded like.
Ooh, can I take this one?
Yeah, go for it.
He's real excited. You know, we will get a house and 2 months later, we'll be making so much money that we'll have money to buy another house. And then 2 months later, we'll have enough money to buy another house. And eventually we'll be tycoons within. A lot closer together than the rollover has been in reality, which is not a failure by far, but it's, you were excited that like this was, you know, going to be rolling within 5 years, which I don't think is
Yeah, really. I think we started, this is before we got to the investment strategy portion of it and understanding what type of investment we were making. But yeah, I get really excited about stuff in general. I think, you know, in my job, I have a new job essentially every 6 months. I've got new projects and things to work on. So I'm really good out of the gate. The hard part for me is the continued execution over time. But yeah, initially I was like, this, just hearing sort of like the formula, you know, you can make an acquisition, you've got the tax advantages to roll back into your next investment. You're given all the tools to sort of figure out the right place to go. That was the initial conversation. Actually, the very initial conversation was like, her, like, come back, talk to me if you're still interested in 6 weeks. Like, get over your excitement phase and let's see if this is real or not. I think that might have been our very first conversation.
Annika's used to that, right? She's used to like that, like, hey, like, I'm all in, let's like go buy it, but wanted to make sure you're still excited a few weeks later.
I mean, usually I benefit. We get a house out of it. So,
right. Right. It's a win-win for everybody, right? You know, Annika, you hit on something that is a very important thing for, I think, a lot of people to understand. And I am in guilty of not explaining it as good as I should probably. We have a 5 years to freedom and we duplicate once a year every 5 years and you kind of parlay this, right? The reality of this 5 years to freedom is the concept remains 100% accurate and we should be doing that. The issue that we need to be talking about more and more, and I've tried to do this, and I'm glad you brought it up because it gives us another chance to talk about it, is the time frame between each of those acquisitions is very different. And it's in the time frame between acquisition number one and number two is the longest. And then number two to three is a little bit shorter, but it's longer. And so it starts to, like, that time frame between acquisitions starts to shorten to the point where it is, you can do it probably every 2 or 3 months, but you're waiting. That's on acquisition number 3, 4, 5. When you start to, you have enough assets that are producing, you have enough things that are going on that all of a sudden you're starting to parlay that money a lot faster. From 1 to 2, it's by far the longest time frame between acquisitions. And it can feel like, how is this ever going to stack up like this? How is this ever going to parlay into where it's supposed to be 5 years from now or 5 properties from now, right? And so usually there's a turning point between property number 3 and 4 for a lot of portfolios where you start to hit that turning point and tipping point where everything parlays a lot faster. And so it's, you know, you're right after that first one and you're running the numbers in your head and you're thinking, how the hell are we going to get number two? Right. It's like, this is, yeah. You know, and so, you know, because you're like, how am I going to save up that extra money again? How am I going to do this? And you start to parlay this, but you're having to, the tax advantages are huge now that those came back that helps us parlay. Now that probably, tell me when did you guys buy your first one? Did you buy it in 2025? When did we buy this one?
We bought it in 2024. So our initial thought was like, let's do this as an investment. If we get to use it a little bit, great. But this is really about investment. But I wanted it to be close to us because I wanted to be able to just be able to absorb more from it. Right. So we ended up, we originally made an offer on a property in Hood Canal in like late October, early November. My turnaround was fast. I think we joined Vodacy in July and we were with real estate agents looking at properties in like September.
Quick, yeah.
But that first property, long story short, they had a septic tank that didn't work. It was built into a hillside and it was going to be like $100,000 repair and they wanted to split it with us. And we're like, we're out. The community helped me with this. I like shared the reports and everyone's like, whoa, get away from this. So we got out. So we didn't end up actually closing on our property till December 11th of 2019, which made a lot of things really difficult that I was planning on doing, including material participation.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And like we're recording this in the fourth quarter. And it starts to get more and more difficult to materially participate, take that bonus depreciation when you get into the fourth quarter. When you get into middle of December, it gets really tough, right?
Yeah, that was a, hey, Merry Christmas. We have to put in 100 hours of work before January 1st.
Right.
That was a lot.
And we did, but after reviewing our log, we listened to all of the advice from Mike Pine and Revo. I'm actually meeting with Mike next week to have a better strategy next time around. And it basically, long story short, is there were too many items in there that were high risk. So we ended up not taking the deduction, which really hurt. But that was one of the consequences of buying so late in the year.
Right. It is. I appreciate you sharing that, because this is such a top of mind top thing for a lot of investors jumping into short-term rentals right now. 100% bonus depreciation came back. In 2024, you didn't have 100%. You had 60%. So it wasn't quite as lucrative back then to be able to do that. Yeah. But checking all those boxes becomes difficult the further into the year you get, being able to figure out how much you're actually going to cost seg out, how much you're going to be able to write off, all those things. And strategically, that can be one of the biggest levers to start to roll in and parlay into other properties. And so where you don't have that on property number one, it makes it even a little bit further. That time frame between property one and two is a little bit further out, because you're saving up a lot more than you naturally would have to save if you just, you know, reduce your taxes by $100,000 by buying the property, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was a big hit.
Yeah. And now there are benefits there. I don't cost seg out and bonus depreciate. I would say I only do it on probably 20 or 30% of my acquisitions, to be honest. I don't do it on most of them, because I usually am trading up properties with every 5 to 7 years, and I don't want to deal with a recapture. And so I just typically don't take it at this stage in the game on many of my acquisitions. So it's not the worst scenario not to do it, but especially, if you're going to be having a property long-term, it is a real nice reduction in taxes for sure, but it's not like it makes the deal worse, but sure makes it nice when you do take it. So yeah. Tell me some of the mistakes, or why you like, was the biggest one just being that time in the year that not being able to take that?
I mean, I'm of two minds of this. So yes, we weren't able to get the bonus depreciation, but we bought when the market was soft. So we got our house 20,000 under asking.
Yep.
And we also, like, we do have a high interest rate, because second home rates, we're at 8%. Like, that's not awesome. But our investment strategy was like more of a 10-year investment strategy. And on the West Coast, 10 years ago, that property, we paid $580 for it. 10 years ago, it didn't exist, but a property like that would have been $250, maybe $200. Yeah. My thought was, let's get in when the market's soft. I can always refi the interest rate. And the first year or two, we're not going to break even. And that's okay. Like, we're able to cover that. I kind of knew that going in, but I think this is going to be a good return in the long run. So that investment. So to your question, do I regret it? No, I think it was the right call. I think I'd be paying $50,000 more for that property if I were buying it today. Yeah. So yeah, we lost the write off, but we got that.
Such an important point. And it's so hard for people to do is buy when things are soft. I mean, they're soft for a reason, because buyers are not jumping in the market. Right. And so, a lot of times the things that keep them out of the market, high interest rates, which does affect the cost of, you know, ownership, right? The cost to hold that property when you're paying a high interest rate. If you can't cover the cost, you can't cover it. So I get it. Stay out of the market. If you can cover it, so much better paying a high interest rate for a period of time and getting a better deal on the property. And then, especially in a longer term time horizon, when you mentioned something that's super, super important, I think really critical when people get into real estate, is real estate is not like stocks and crypto and things like that, where you trade and they're super liquid and you trade all the time, unless you're a flipper. But most of us aren't. And short-term rentals are a long-term game. And you have to look at things with a longer-term time horizon. And the most successful investors do that. They look at 5-10-year time horizons when they're making their decisions. And then they're looking back and saying, man, that was a really good deal, because cash flow usually is your lowest return overall on the deal, you know, on any real estate deal you look at in a 3, 5, 10 year time horizon. The cash flow is pennies compared to what you made with note pay down, appreciation, depreciation, all those different things that make real estate so great in a lot of our eyes. I was just at a business retreat with a lot of, like, I was to say I was the low man on the totem pole is giving myself credit, that I was actually on the totem pole with the guys in the room. And so it was one thing was glaringly obvious to me is they all thought in like 10, 20, 30 year time horizons when they did something, when they make decisions on business investments and doing different things. They were never looking at a year or two or three down the line. It was all these longer term time horizons. It's how they made their decisions, but it's also how they got to where they're at as well. Looking at things from the overall, is this going to be good for us long term. And, you know, and that 5 to 10 year time horizon is a very realistic time horizon for residential real estate to be pretty much, it erases a lot of the little mistakes that we make along the way. And especially if we do make a mistake or two, a lot of times that time that goes by kind of erases some of those mistakes. So are there lessons that we could share on some of the mistakes or some of the, you know, we was the property furnished? Talk to me about buying a property, getting it set up, budgeting for all that stuff. Talk to me a little bit about that.
So it was furnished and that was kind of a mistake, actually. The people we bought it from, they didn't have anything to do with their stuff. So they just said, do you want us to leave it? And actually,
they tried to sell it to me, and I said, no, I'm going to replace it also.
Yeah. And then they were like, well, okay, you can have it. But we ended up getting rid of almost everything, which just turned into a pain in the butt, a lot of trips to like donations and that kind of thing, because it just wasn't the...
We're still storing some of it.
I think we kept some fleece blankets.
Yeah. Okay.
And dishes, but it was not worth the hassle at all. I mean, you know, futons and just like gray sofa, which we actually repurposed to the other property, so that wasn't so bad. But you know, it just wasn't what we wanted, the story we wanted to tell in there, so it was more hassle, I think.
Yeah, it was all very like gray, beige, mm-hmm. no color, no fun, nothing nice about it.
No shade on Ray Dunn, but you know, Ray Dunn with the like tools, baking, like everything in there is,
I keep interrupting and putting like exclamation points because these are just all really common mistakes and lessons for people. And so I just want to highlight that is furnished properties are not always a good thing. They can turn into such an extra job of actually moving all the stuff out, figuring out who's going to take it, where are you going to give it to, all that stuff. And so unless you're going to use the furniture, make the seller take it. Say, hey, listen, yeah, I know you don't want it, neither do I, but I'm buying the house, not the furniture. You need to have it out of here, right? And because it just adds more to your plate at a time when the plate gets overwhelmed in the first place. And that's a really good point. So you had to deal with all that and then go figure out, okay, let's refurnish this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a lot of moving truck rental and that kind of stuff. I mean, they left down to like, they left sugar. I think they just didn't have time to get any of it.
Yeah.
There wasn't these video games.
Toys.
Yeah. I think the other, I don't know if I'd call this a mistake, but maybe surprise that I should have not been surprised by, was I had done all my calculations for setup based on like, you know, dollars per square foot and some of those sorts of things. I completely forgot about the outdoor space.
Yes.
When I did all my numbers.
Yep.
And if you look at this property, this is the first picture. This is the anchor, and it's what's driving most of our bookings is there's a hot tub, and it's not a cheap hot tub. We got an Arctic spa, we spent some money on it. We wanted it to be nice. We got a sauna direct from Almost Heaven that came disassembled, that had to be set up. And then we ended up leveling the yard, fencing the yard. I mean, we spent probably $20,000, $25,000 on the exterior of the house. That was not in my spreadsheet.
Not in the budget. Yeah. We talked so much about that. And one of those other points that I've been like, we got to talk more about, hey, when we talk about price per square foot to get these properties furnished and set up, we're talking about the inside. And a lot of short-term rentals, a huge part of our experience is the outside living. And like your guys with the sauna and the hot tub and the whole area that you fenced off and have this nice private area back there, like that stuff costs money. And we've got to make sure that we're getting that stuff budgeted for. And it's very easy to forget that when you're talking about price per square foot, that's talking about interior furnishings. And most of us, I mean, short-term rentals, I mean, really most short-term rentals, a lot of the money makers, as far as the experience is the outside amenities that we have.
Yeah, it's beautiful too. I mean, he did it all. I kind of was focused on the inside and it turned, I mean, it made it into a destination. It turned the house into like a full, like you could just stay there and be happy.
Yeah. And it is, those of you listening, you guys always know we post the links to these properties in the show notes. So you can go check it out. It is a gorgeous property. And I mean, you guys did an amazing job obviously, but it's, that we post it. I always say success leaves clues. So go check those out. And then obviously if you're in Cle Elum, Washington, you go stay there and check it out in person. And so, so tell me, how long did that take? We bought it end of December, had to get everything out. What was the goal and how long did it take us before we kind of launched the property?
Yeah. If you buy a property in the mountains, don't plan on doing anything outside in the first 4 months of the year.
Yeah.
I think this was, I don't think I even really understood how much snow they got up there. So we didn't go live until really July 1st. It took us a full 6 months to set up.
Well, can I pause and just say, like, order your sofa first?
Oh,
like, the second you get your house, put your order for your sofa and maybe like anything else that needs to be built. That was, we were waiting to open just because we were waiting on the stinking sofa for like 6 weeks.
Yeah.
It's like cabinets. Like, so any furniture that needs to be built, it's like when you're building a house and you have to do the cabinets, you're like, okay, we're not even close to cabinets. We got to get those cabinets ordered so they can start building them, right? Otherwise it holds everything up. It's a really, so you were doing custom furniture in there. You
just
were
ordering things. I mean, yes, you already mentioned like that people said like $30,000 budget and went way over. You told me and I was like, yeehaw, this is going to be fun. Like, let's just order everything custom. But we still, like, thank goodness I had a designer help to, like, you know, we still did Wayfair. We did Amazon bedding. Yeah. And it was still like to the penny, maybe even a little bit over. But the two things we did, like, invest money in was our dining table and the sofa, just because it, you know, main area made it look together. And it's really comfy.
One thing we probably should mention is in January, we ended up hiring a property manager. Her name's Chelsea. Shout out to Dixco. They have about 16 properties all in the Clay Elm area. And she's a super host. And I looked at her properties. I had a conversation with her. And I could just tell immediately, like, she got it. She's looking for 4.95 plus kind of review scores on her properties. We were speaking the same language and we ended up doing a lot. We used her handyman. We used her outdoor landscaper, who was half of the cost of the other quotes that I got. Like, the number of discounts and deals we got by using the folks in her network was huge. I know you talk a lot about your team, and we used Jeff Chisholm for the financing. I found an agent that had short-term rental folks on staff and her, and as hard as all of this was, and as long as it took, it got done right because we had the right team.
Love it. And you, and I love, you know, mentioning that with the, and it makes a huge difference. It's night and day difference with your experience if you get the right property management partner. It's by far and away, when you talk about the team members, it's probably the most important team member long-term is your property manager. And having a good one out of the gate makes a huge difference. So high reviews, really good customer service, delivering a great job. You guys have a beautiful property. And I happened to be looking at the property and I saw that we had this 2-star review sneak in. And so those are like, as an investor, for those of you that don't have properties yet, those are like the worst, like, kick in the gut, like punch in the gut feeling that you get when you see those come in. Like, what? Like, what happened? Like, what was, and then you read it. And I probably shouldn't say this out loud on the podcast, but when I read it, I was like, oh, I guarantee they came from Seattle. But that was my initial. Sorry for all you people in Seattle. I love Seattle. It's beautiful, but there's some weirdos there. And so I thought you might have got one of those because I read it and I thought, oh my gosh, it's just a complainer, but it hurts, right? It hurts right out of the gate.
Yeah.
And I want to know, I just want to hear you guys talk about how that happened and how it was handled.
Honestly, it was so off the wall compared to the other reviews that I was like, is somebody trying to sabotage us? Like, is there a neighbor that hates the fact that we're Airbnb or someone else who has Airbnb nearby who wants to like shut us down? Because it was just so bizarre and just.
It was like a one night midweek rental.
Yeah. And it was like a Tuesday to Wednesday. Yeah. And it was so off from the rest of the reviews. It was.
Yeah, it was like our first 6 reviews were 5 stars. They were glowing. We got a guest favorite, right? I was like, our first month, we got a 20-night booking. Like, things were just, and I think I said in the first month, I might have even posted it, I know this isn't going to continue. Like, there's no way we're going to be booked to 80% capacity with, you know, these stellar reviews one after the other for the next year. Like, we're going to hit some bumps. I didn't expect a 2-star review. The person that reviewed us had been on a platform for 2 years. I don't think they really understand how the review system works. A lot of the things they called out were things that were actually, they were informed of ahead of time. Like, there is inspection nearby. It is annoying. So like, I do understand that. But they complained about like being able to see out the window Are people being able to see the house out the window? It's like, well, if you have a window, it works both ways.
Close the blinds.
There's some stuff. It felt a little bit unfair. Honestly, I lost sleep over it. I was awake for like 2 hours just thinking about it. I called our property manager the next day and I'm like, what is going on? And this is where I think having somebody, she has over 1,000 reviews across her properties. Having somebody who sees and she's like, look, these people are out there. This is going to happen. It's unfortunate that it happened early. She also mentioned it happens a lot in between peaks. So we had a follow-on conversation and she said, the people that book in between peaks tend to be more entitled and expect more. And we did get a 4-star review actually a couple of days ago too. And the reason they gave is out one of the windows, we have another neighbor who's remodeling. They had some stuff outside and they didn't want to look at their stuff. And we're just like, oh my gosh, this is so frustrating. So
look at it then.
Yeah. I'm like, there's like 27 other windows in the house. Open one of them. But we are actually working with that neighbor on putting a fence up. Like we're trying to respond, but the property manager did a really good job of point by point. So for example, one of the things they said is like 10 a.m. checkout is really strict. Well, it turns out they were late checking out and they never asked for a late checkout, which they would have been given. So she actually noted that in the review. She kind of addressed their items and probably 80% of the things they brought up, they were either informed of ahead of time or were just not true.
Another reason to have a property manager, she was much more tactful in her response than we probably would have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you get emotional, right? You get defensive and you're like, what?
I feel like they're attacking your character.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is like literally blood and sweat that goes into this place and lots of money. And you're just like, did you not notice all the good stuff? Because the 2-star review literally says the house was great and all, but blah, 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 mm-hmm. blah.
I think they said the host was great too. I think they said that Chelsea was great. Yeah, I'm pretty sure when I read it, I was like,
however, the other interesting thing, and I'm not quite sure what to do about this, is this house is 3 bedrooms plus an alcove for kids. It sleeps 8 and they rent it as a couple and they commented on the price being high. And my thought is like, if I'm renting a getaway for me and her, I'm not going to book a 3-bedroom house.
Right.
Like, why would I do that? So and maybe this is just like inexperience on Airbnb, but it's like, it's $500. It was $500 a night at the time, which honestly isn't even high for the property in the area. But as a couple, that is a lot. Like that's an expensive stay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was kind
of. But you also know what you're renting. You know the price point before you hit reserve. And so if it's a lot, don't rent it. And so, I mean, I think that the reason I brought it up is one, so that people know it happens, right? Things like this happen on good properties. It just once in a while you get one of these people coming through, but it also is not the end all be all, right? You recover from it. You get more people in, you get 5-star reviews. It really is an outlier and it shows as an outlier from an outside person looking in. When I saw it and I looked at it, I'm like, you look at it and like Annika said, it was like, this seems like somebody almost like just picking it apart. It wasn't congruent or consistent with anybody else's experience. And so you just almost throw it out. And as much as you lose sleep over it and it hurts and you're like, man, you know, we put a lot of blood, sweat and tears and money into this thing to have you have an amazing time. And then to hear that, you take it personal, but it isn't the end. It isn't the end of the game. Right. It doesn't, I mean, you move on from it and you forget about it and you just go. And that's why I wanted to bring it up is just to say, you know, from there, you have 5 stars back to back again.
Yeah. We got 2 more after that, but it's still, the wound is still fresh.
Yes. But thanks for the encouragement, actually. Yeah. It makes me feel good to hear that.
It doesn't. Now, when we get those, right, here's the reality of what happens on the OTAs is, if you're in a big area, Clay Elum is not a huge market, but there's homes there, right? But you drop in your rankings. You drop from page 1 or 2 to page 5 or 6, right? You're going to drop. But as soon as you get a couple more of those 5-star reviews, you jump right back up. So you just, and then they get buried and it gets to be kind of an afterthought for everybody.
Yeah. And our bookings are still pouring in. Our rates are, our property manager uses automated rates and they're going up. We have lots of bookings that are already in there. So it doesn't appear to be affecting us very much. It is. It's one of those things I think you've got to just learn how to stomach. And I called her up and I'm like, hey, can we just like talk through all the feedback you've gotten? what can we do better? And I think that took her by surprise, to be honest. I think most people are like, how can I minimize my investment from here?
Yeah.
But I really like, I want to be in that top 1%. And I know she's an extremely high quality property manager and we can get there. Yeah. But for the most part, she's like, these things just happen and you can't please everybody.
Yeah. Well, once in a while, like you get an outlier guest that does that. And to your point, Raj, of going and saying, hey, listen, what are some, tell me the feedback. Like that first year, our launch year, that's what you want to do. If you're going to be in the top, the top of the game in that top 1%, it takes that. It's saying, hey, listen, I didn't think about that, but while we were setting it up, well, we didn't, maybe we can make that adjustment. And a lot of times that feedback doesn't lead to bad reviews. And so it's a great way and it's a great lesson for investors to talk to your property managers and get that feedback. Like I've got one of my properties, I was talking to my property manager about the same thing and just like, we're getting 5 stars. It looks awesome on everything looks great, but we're getting, she's gotten multiple people tell them that the path down to the lake is getting a little steep and it's getting a little overgrown and that we might want to put some steps on it. And so it's like, oh man, how can we elevate the experience with something like that? That's not necessarily always showing up in the reviews.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. So July 1st, we're into October, heading into the holidays. Things are going good as far as the bookings coming in on a fairly consistent basis. What is the next step? Where do we go from here?
On this property or in general?
Yeah, in general, this property and in general.
Yeah. I think on this property, there's going to be a little more optimization. We're considering a cold plunge for next summer. Winter, you have the snow, so just jump in the snow. But leaning into this like kind of zen space a bit.
Wellness retreat area.
Yeah. We got to figure out maintenance of that cold plunge. The hot tub company that does our hot tub says they do it. But just got to look at costs on that stuff. Outside of that, I think it's hopefully the reviews just take this up and away. And we put a lot of work in up front. I think outside of it, I mentioned we didn't get the tax write-off. So the capital investment ended up being pretty high in terms of down payment and all that stuff. So the only other thing we can really do on that is refi. I think when we look at our next set of properties, our next property, we're going to look a little more. I want to do a DSCR loan for the reason that I want somebody else. I want to be very sure that I'm not going to have to put money into it. So probably save a larger down payment this next time around. We went 10% down on this one. So probably go more like 20 or 25% down and pay a little more attention to the potential to cash flow as well. The area of Washington that is if anyone's looking at Washington, Forks is the place to be. The problem is Forks is really far away and I don't want to go there like ever. So it's, you have properties out there you're acquiring for $400,000 or $500,000 that are making $120,000, $130,000 in revenue a year. It's pretty great. So I don't want to do that, but I may look at other parts of the country where maybe we won't use it all on our own.
You're also talking about a condo, like a 1 or 2 bedroom right here in Edmonds.
Yeah, that was the other.
Manage it ourselves.
Yeah, we're also considering getting something like within walking distance of our house we can self-manage. So those are the two sorts of directions. We have to, from a capital perspective, it's going to take us a little time to recover from where we are. But that's kind of what we're thinking about next.
Yeah. And that's, and it's when you are thinking of next moves or your first move, it's, we talk about those property goals. Like what is the property goal? Is it more of strictly more of an investment or do I really want it as a lifestyle asset? Or do I truly like, hey, this is like a legacy property. We want to be in this area. And based on, we want to make the numbers work as good as possible. And sometimes that's just negative cash flow and we're supplementing like a really cool vacation home for ourselves. There's this sliding scale. And a lot of times we say, hey, listen, I want to be on the investment side. You mentioned the Forks, Washington area. And it's like, hey, looks really good on paper as an investment, might not be the ideal lifestyle asset for you guys. You're like, I may never go there, but it could check the box as an investment. We have to say, where do we want to land on that scale? And, you know, ultimately we want it all, right? We always want cash flow, lifestyle, asset, everything, right? And so not every market allows us to have it all. And so it's being able to make those decisions of what works. And you guys, you know, you have that other problem with the geography of where you live, you know, the West Coast, the Intermountain West is, you know, very good markets to own, long-term appreciation, everything else. They're expensive to acquire. Acquisition costs are very high in these areas that we live, especially out West. and then versus the revenue that they're going to generate. So like a good property out west, a lot of times is breaking even or barely cash flowing, right? And so it's looking at these different areas and opportunities that might be out of your comfort zone a little bit. And so trying to make some of those decisions as you start to navigate what that next move really does look like.
Yeah, I think the property we have can cash flow. I think it's going to take 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
To get the economics right and to get the reviews and repeat visits and all that stuff in place. But yeah, the next one, I think the other thing with Forks too, not just for us to visit, but set up, you go to the property a lot to set up.
Yeah.
It's a 4-hour drive.
Yeah.
That's brutal. Plus a ferry. I honestly don't think we could do it. Like this property is like 90 minutes to 2 hours away. We spent 40 hours driving in the month of December.
He tried to put that on
Yeah, it was that part was valid, but that number would have been 80. I just don't have the time to do that. So I think it's like, can we do something like maybe we go look at the Ozarks or just do something totally different where we can get more help because the acquisition is lower, that sort of thing.
Exactly. You're trading off lower acquisitions. They're further away. You're not going to set it up. You're budgeting. Part of that setup is budgeting teams to go do that for you. Right. Yep. And you end up showing up at the end of the day. But it's a plane ride out, not a drive out.
Yeah. Or, walking. We live in a really cute town. It's the hometown of Rick Steves. The occupancy rates in Edmonds are like 70-80%. The rates are decent. So it actually is a decent market and there's no regulations here yet. So that's the other thing. I'm like, well, what if we did that? And what if she managed it? She became a real estate
professional. Just right in your backyard. Yeah.
So that's the other very different ideas, but that's kind of how we're thinking.
Yeah. Awesome. Love it. I have one of my favorite property. People always ask me what my favorite property is. It's right down the street from where I live. And they're like, it's kind of weird. Your favorite property is right down the street. My family's favorite property is in Georgia, not Utah. But I have a property that's literally a mile away from where I live. And it's one of my favorite properties.
Oh, nice. Do you manage
it? That can work too. What's that?
Do you manage it yourself? I'm guessing not.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, you do. Okay.
Yeah. So we have that property, interestingly enough. So we have it as we're right at the base of Snow Basin Ski Resort. We're in kind of a resort town area in Utah. And I've had a long-term renter in there whose home burned down Thanksgiving of 2023.
Oh, my gosh.
And so then their insurance company had to rent them a fully furnished home. Well, we're in an area that is fairly restricted and there's not a lot of short-term rentals and there's not a lot of really nice short-term rentals. They're big enough similar to what their home was that burned down. And their insurance company is paying me my full short-term rental nightly rate at 100% occupancy. And they've been in there for 2 years. And so I'm not going to touch my performance on that property that I have had the last 2 years, but maybe that's why it's my favorite property, but maybe it turns to my not favorite property when they move out. I'm super happy for them. Their new home is done and they're actually going to be moving out at the end of this month, actually. So, but yeah, that one, we do manage it ourselves. We haven't had to do a whole heck of a lot for it the last couple of years. And been getting full short-term rental rates from their insurance company while they're rebuilding.
Our midterm rental has a very similar situation. There's a family that's been in there since February. It was going to be there for 3 months is what they told us. And now it's like next year sometime is when they'll be done. But it's a deal. They had a house fire. I don't know if it was a total loss, but it was a pretty significant loss.
Yeah, I'll tell you that in areas that are more, populated type areas where you do have like just permanent residents, those are viable options for a lot of when there's flooding, fires, mold or any sort of a disaster in the house, they've got a place, they don't have all their stuff. So they need furnished properties. And a lot of times this is a good market for them.
Yeah.
Awesome, guys. Well, listen, as we're wrapping up, I always like to ask, is there something for both of you? Both of you get to answer this one too. So both be thinking about it as you kind of look back and looking forward, knowing what you know now. If you could go back to give somebody that's listening this advice or your younger self some advice of what you wish you knew or wish you would do different the next time around.
I mean, there's tactical things that I mentioned, like, maybe have a larger down payment or buy in a warmer month of the year, but I think the big thing is just take the step. Like there's so many times that I've had ideas for things and not done it. And I think going through the training and hearing from the community gave me the confidence that I needed although once you do it, you really are on your own. It is your deal. Like, you've got a lot of support, you've got a lot of structure, but you're not going to learn any other way. And we're still learning a lot. My property manager reminds me of that. So we're still new to the industry, but I wish I would have done this 5 years ago. I think that's probably the big thing for me.
Love it. Monica?
I don't remember. You said, what do I wish we had done differently?
Do you wish you would, like, if you had to go back and give your younger self some advice, is there anything that comes to mind of something that you wish you would have known back then that you know now? Is there something you wish you would have done differently?
Not differently, no. But I will say to anybody who's going to start this, unless it is your full-time like career, definitely know that the spouse is going to be involved. It is definitely something we've done as a couple when it was just kind of his idea. And I'm like, yeah, go ahead. But yeah, I haven't regretted it at all. It's been actually fun and something we've done together. And, you know, working as a team with, not just working as a team, like raising kids, but working as a team with your spouse is actually quite a blessing. So yeah,
I love that actually. And I always love when couples come on the podcast together, because usually one or the other one is going to lead the charge, right? It was their kind of idea. They kind of spearheaded it and everything else. But then of all the real estate that I've done in my life, and like when I used to do development stuff, and I used to do a lot of build jobs, and we used to do the fix and flips and all that kind of stuff, I never was a part of an asset class that spouses and families did together as much as short-term rentals. And I don't know how you can do short-term rentals without each other either. And so it's not like it's almost a necessary, collaboration, that just for the nature of this asset class. And these are big, major life decisions that you're making together as a family. Mm-hmm. And they are time consuming and they are capital intensive, and you are making big decisions for yourself, you know, short term and long term. And it is super important to both of you be on the same page. And I have somebody last week that was like, hey, if you, I'm in, if you can convince my wife to do this. I'm like, I'm not in the wife convincing business. This is something that you guys are doing together, one way or the other. And we really tried to hammer that point home. And I really appreciate you bringing that up, because it doesn't get talked about enough that this is something that is very, like I said, time consuming, capital intensive, especially on the front end. It is very front end loaded. What's going to happen for you guys right now, just predicting the future on your property, you went through that setup and launch phase. You're right in the middle still of your launch. Your first year is really your launch year, where you're making those adjustments, but you're making fewer and fewer adjustments. And toward the end of this year, you're not going to make a whole lot of adjustments. And then you're going to be twiddling your thumbs thinking, man, this was really like go, 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 go. And then now what do we do? Right. And so that's when you start spinning the wheels on the next property, because there's only so much you can do. Once they're set up and going and operational, you let it go and you look at the calendar when you want to use it. And so, but there's going to come a time where you're going to start to get, you're going to think, man, I feel like we were running 90 miles an hour for, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 months. And now all of a sudden it's starting to slow down. What do we do now? Like, do we need to tweak something? And really you don't. You're doing that to set it up for the long term.
Yeah, just to emphasize what you were saying, there is this, you know, when you think about investment of time and money, there's lots of different types of return that you get. And there's something, when we go to that property now, the two of us walk in, we made, like, yes, we had a lot of help. We hired people. But, like, this is something we created. Outside of our kids, this is the only thing we can point to and say that about. And maybe this is why couples get into small businesses together. There's just a lot of, to me, that's a lot of value.
Like, there's a huge,
it's a creative act to create. Yeah.
Like you said earlier, you're like, man, you got help and you got advice and everything else, but you did it. You're the ones that are doing it. Nobody's doing it for you. You're having to, you know, spend the 40 hours of driving back and forth to the property, and you're having to do all that stuff. And then you walk in and there's this sense of accomplishment. You look around, you're like, man, we did this. It's pretty awesome. Right. Sure. And we did it together. And you're proud of each other. You're proud of yourself. You're walking in and, you know, you're like, man, this is pretty fun that our kids saw us do this in the middle of it. And, there's a huge intangible, aspect and the return on that investment of time and effort and everything else that comes from putting together and doing those hard things. Right. And it's so true. And it's what we love about all of that. Like, it's like it's like these compounding returns on things that we don't really think about before you get into it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Awesome, guys. Well, listen, I love these conversations. I very, very much appreciate you letting other people listen in on these conversations. And so appreciate you joining me today. It was a lot of fun for me. I know everybody that listens, these are by far and away their favorite episodes because these are the ones we get the most feedback on. And so those of you listening, we know how valuable your time is and we always appreciate it. We always want to thank you at the end of these episodes for spending your time with us. And we hope you got as much value out of it as I do out of these conversations. If you did get value, our goal is to help people walk into this game with their eyes wide open. So share the show. Those things help us. We don't run ads or sponsorships on these shows. You just get to listen in on these conversations. And if you like it, it grows. If you don't, it won't. And so we've been growing. So hopefully that's a good sign. And so if you have more than 30 seconds, give us a thumbs up or review on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. And the final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today. Start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.